Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Yes, that iconic music, Charlie Brown Christmas, and this iconic radio show, Rosenblum and Levine, our last show of 2020. And I think, Bruce, the texter from the 847, the Tech Zone, by the way, is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. I think this texter sums up what it is to be a Rosenblum and Levine fan. I just wanted to say thanks for another year of Rosenblum and Levine shows. I have never missed any of your shows, staying up late to listen or setting the alarm for your morning shows. I'm looking forward to another year of fabulously sarcastic entertainment.
How is he spelling morning, Steve? Which way
well,
is he spelling?
Well, there's no U. There's no U.
Like, okay. There's no you in Levine and Rosenblum. No, there's
all
not.
Right.
But there is in John Greenberg.
No, there's not. No, there's not. You have to just MOT, but no, there's no you. We're gonna go to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, and we're going to welcome in the founding editor in chief of The Athletic, John Greenberg. John, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you guys. I also am a huge Rosenblum and Levine fan. There's got to be a Rosenblum and Levine law firm somewhere.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Although the one in, now I can't, was it Parks and Rec where they had Vorp?
It was
Vorp, Pakoda, and just whatever. There wasn't Mike Schur wrote that, right?
Right.
And Tremendous. Yeah, I love the law firm like that. So, a belated happy Hanukkah and a good Festivus to you, the airing of grievances. Thank you for joining us today. As Bruce and I were talking, we had mentioned that maybe the best, not best, but the most notable Chicago stories took place off the field. Theo walking away, John McDonough being told to walk away, Tony La Russa being welcomed back, Ricky Renteria being told to walk away, and Len Casper deciding to take the red line to the other side of town. Those are all significant. So I'm not going to ask you to rate them unless you have one that jumps out as the story, off-the-field story of the year.
That's a great point. You know, I mean, I think the Len one was the most surprising to people that, you know, I don't know how many people Len told about this. That was the one that was like, and it's not the biggest story, of course, you know, going from, I don't think anyone expected Len to go from Cubs TV to White Sox radio, even knowing how much Len loved the radio and how much he loved to work and how you would see it when, you know, once the playoffs started and local TV was done, he'd still be at the ballpark, you know, helping with radio. So the love was there. That was the one that was just like, I think that one, the McDonough one was equally surprising because I remember I was texting with, you know who I was texting with at that moment was Osnagian about something else. You know, it was really random. And then all of a sudden I'm like, all right, Osney, I got to go. John McDonough just got fired. That one definitely surprised me as well. The Theo one, like Bruce, you know, we knew that it was coming, you know, next year was his last year. I mean, he basically told us that. And I think a lot of us figured that he was going to kind of take a step back in 2021 and let Jed have more responsibility and maybe focus on some other stuff. It was still surprising. I mean, but yeah, these were the big stories. The Rick Renteria one was, listen, Rick was surprising too. I mean, we did not think he was getting fired this season, but I will say I wrote, you know, that last week and in the playoffs, the kind of things that went wrong for the White Sox are the kind of things that that people in the front office who sit there and complain about every move together, right? And they grouse about everything the manager does wrong. Those are the kind of moves that get you fired.
I think it was more of a collective way that he handled or didn't handle pitching that got Ricky Renteria fired, because we know he was wonderful at getting players to play the game. They all ran through walls for him. They had great success up until they clinched the playoff spot, winning at guaranteed rate against Minnesota and being the first team in the American League to clinch. And then watching it all fall apart was just the culminating spot of that. Hey, John, going back to this theme here, when you look at the Theo Epstein part of it, I find it is surprising or more surprising and a bigger story than most people made it, because of the fact of how many people actually walk away from $10 million and walk away from a team when there's still transition to do before you're ready to leave. So I found it to be a little different story than maybe how it was portrayed.
You know, and that's a great point. I think that was the question I asked him, like, early on when we did that Zoom call. Like, yeah, we get what you're saying. Like, when he explained why and everything, and he wants to give Jed a chance to put a stamp on it. But my point was like, well, yeah, but you're still like pretty valuable. Like, why wouldn't you want to be a part of this transition when they actually need you? And, you know, I wondered if, you know, just the state of baseball and the state of the team and the fact that, you know, it's going to be a year of cost cutting and everything just kind of pushed him to say, okay, I'm done. You know, if there was not, I don't want to say it's not selfishness, but it's just the fact that he just felt like it was time for him to go, you know, and there wasn't any reason for him to stay. They weren't going to be, you know, maybe they're going to compete for an NL Central title, maybe. And that was kind of the ceiling, but yeah, I agree with you in a lot of ways, Bruce, because I never saw him quitting, you know, like resigning like that. And you know, he tried to say it's not about money, whatever, and they didn't tell him, but he did make it, you know, he specifically said that he hopes his salary could go to help other people. We didn't ask him that question. You know, he brought that up on his own. So that also made me think that he felt he could save some jobs by leaving.
Our guest is John Greenberg, the founding editor of The Athletic. Bruce Levine, Steve Rosenblum here on The Score. This is our final show of 2020. You know, you guys are talking about Theo and the money, and John, you made a good point about him volunteering, I hope, to save some jobs. Do you think that he was getting out ahead of being one of the layoffs that he looked at?
No.
I mean,
I don't.
Okay. I just think that some of these comments could be interpreted as Tom Ricketts saying, we got to do something here and we need money, even though a billionaire should never say we need money. I think that's awful. If you're a Cub fan, I think you have a little reason to be angry. So I didn't know if that were the case, get out ahead of that, or ensure that he can get out ahead of that and Jed can be the guy that they don't look anywhere else because of money issues.
Yeah, I don't know, Bruce. Do you think it was also him wanting to get Jed stabilized in that position? I mean, I think it was pretty much, you know, Ricketts likes
there was
him,
plenty
and I think it was
time.
Pretty much agreed on.
Yeah, John, there was plenty of time to do that prior to this point of him stepping off. I think there was obviously something that drove him to say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
And I don't know if we'll ever know that. I think as time goes on, we might find out more about what that was. And when Theo moves away and starts his next career as running for Congress or the Senate or running another baseball team, maybe some of those things will come to come up, but I don't think right now we know the whole story.
No, I think we'll have to feed him a little Manischewitz, you know, and see if he see if we can get him talking.
Sure, today's the day to do that. John Greenberg is our guest here on The Score, the founding editor-in-chief of The Athletic. And one of the things that you should subscribe to The Athletic. You get a variety, you get so much, you get all the information you need. One of the things John does is write Dollars and Cents. It's a column about sports media and sports business in Chicago, and that's really what we've been talking about. The off-the-field stuff is all about media and business. And we grew up, John, Bruce and I were talking earlier, and you grew up as well. Radio was your lifeline. It was your, I equated, the voice of your franchise is your radio guy, and your mm-hmm. voice of your franchise is that way. And I'm biased. I grew up with Vin Scully, so he did both, and he was the best. And everybody in every town thinks their baseball guy is the best. But that's also the way Len Casper grew up with Ernie Harwell. Wherever Ernie was, that was where it was the best to be. And I don't know how they look at it today, how baseball teams look at it today. I still cling to the idea that your voice, your radio voice, is in so many ways the face of your franchise, and maybe the proliferation of TV and the fact you can get it on your phone like you can get radio on your phone. I don't know if that's changed or not. Is there a way they measure it now? Is there a way that, do you think teams are treating it importantly enough and correctly enough if you're a baseball team compared to, say, a football team, which is a much more national sport, and baseball is much more local, much more regional. It's they're at the end of the bar with you, I think, when they're in my ear, when
right.
I'm listening to them on the radio. Do you think those things have changed, those sensibilities have changed?
Well, yeah, I think naturally, you know, I think the TV voices are kind of looked at as number one, although the Cubs, it's different because you have Pat Hughes. And mm-hmm. Pat Hughes, you know, resonates so much with Cubs fans. I think that's definitely one of the franchises where, you know, if you don't think of him, you know, I think some people probably don't listen to him at all, and they are only TV, but I think a lot of true Cubs fans, you know, love Pat. And they loved, you know, they loved Ron Santo, obviously. That was a big draw. And I think Ron Coomer has really done a good job filling those shoes after Keith Moreland, you know. So it's just, I think that in that case, I don't know about the White Sox. I mean, I know how big Farmio was. You know, he was huge. He was, and it's a story I've been meaning to do, is a list of the all-time White Sox characters, because there are just characters, you know, past mm-hmm. and present all over that organization, which is great. I think Len does have a really good chance to, you know, build a huge following with the White Sox, but, you know, Jason and Steve Stone was obviously a face of the Cubs. Now people love him for the White Sox, and they love Benetti, the local kid. They have a really strong lineup right now. I don't know if radio is as strong in every market. I would have to, you know, I'm not as familiar with every market and how mm-hmm. much people love their local radio guy, but I would bet Chicago is the strongest town for baseball radio right now. Wouldn't you say, Bruce?
Well, I'd say so, but, you know, with the White Sox, you know, Ed was great, and he was the voice of summer on the radio, and one of the finest people you're ever going to meet off the field as well, just a terrific individual. But he was never – Ken Harrelson was the voice
right.
of the White Sox, and that was established for many years. And that I think it's the personality what they bring sometimes kind of resonates. I mean, Hawk was you know, arguably the most loved White Sox broadcaster and the most hated broadcaster at the same time, right? And when you resonate on both sides of that, then you're the local version of Howard Cosell,
yep.
okay? And that is fascinating in itself when you think about it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, 100% with Hawk. I mean, he's top of the list of the characters. I mean, him and Farmio and just, you know, you had Coop for so long. Bob Rosenberg is the one scorer that everyone knows. It's just, it's a fun place. And it's interesting, you know, when teams hire managers, they go opposite, or coaches, right? They like to go opposite. They really kind of did that with the White Sox, because there's very, you know, Len is not going to be having a party in the booth like Farmiga did with visitors coming in and out, right? Jason Benetti Jason's got his own personality, but he's no hawk. So they really went opposite here, and in a good way, I think. I think it's a nice transition to a new era.
John Greenberg is our guest. He is the founding editor-in-chief of The Athletic. We're talking announcing and baseball and things like that. I had not thought about the point you made about White Sox characters, but I guess any team that was owned by Bill Veeck that way, that's where you would start. And it would seem that DNA is everywhere. And good for that. That would be an interesting thing to pursue. Get them while they're still there and write that story and set off the fireworks.
Yeah, and Jerry is big on it too, because Jerry keeps people, you know, you have a job with Jerry, you have a job for decades. And I think that kind of, Jerry's always liked, you know, it seems like interesting, you know, colorful people around him. Wouldn't you say, Bruce?
Without a doubt, and I don't think Ricky Renteria falls into that job for decades. it is subjective, but Jerry, as we all know, is a very loyal guy. I would say, you know, John, that the White Sox are an interesting place to work, and I think that Len was very sincere in the idea that radio is something that he really wanted to do. And when it got around to playoff time and the Cubs were involved, he would be shut out every year that they were involved, because of the fact that TV was done and national TV took over. And I think that was really a driving force. So the only shocking thing to me was that, again, if you look at money, you know, he'll be making half the money that he made as a Cub broadcaster, and he was going to even make more. So, you know, it's rare in this day and age when you find somebody who says, you know what, I'm doing fine, I've done fine, I've made a lot of money, but that's not my driving force. My driving force is the passion of doing a radio. I'm not going to do it with the Cubs, so the White Sox are a nice alternative if they want me.
Yeah, and here's something, though, that I think is interesting, right? Because he's doing 25 games on TV, you know, or about that. That's what they think. That's substantial. Mm-hmm. Part of me wonders if, when Steve Stone eventually retires, when he's 95 years old, if there's a Len and Benetti booth. I know it's not traditional, because neither of them are ex-ball players, right? They're both play-by-play guys. But, you know, people are talking, all these TV guys are talking more about conversational booths now, right? Not just the standard play-by-play color guy. So I wonder if that's, you know, something in Len's future after he does just radio, mostly radio for a number of years.
We're talking with John Greenberg, founding editor-in-chief of The Athletic. As long as we're talking baseball, this is a two-part question, John. I hope you brought your blue books.
I do. Let me get my pen out.
You'll be writing an essay. Who would you like to see Marquis replace Lancaster with, and who do you think they will replace Lancaster with?
Okay. I like the idea of Wayne Randazzo. You know, I think he's a local kid. He's got not an unorthodox hire, really. He's got a big-time radio job right now with the New York Mets, you know, and that's obviously a team that Mike McCarthy has a lot of connections with. His dad was a groundskeeper there. And, you know, he's a Mets fan, so he knows Wayne. He knew Wayne. He talked to Wayne. He didn't even know Wayne was from Chicago the first time. So, you know, we know he's interviewed. I like him. I think he's got a good chance. Who do I think they're going to take? You know what? I don't have a favorite right now, just because we don't have any. I think it's going to be someone we're not going to expect. You know, I don't think they're going to hire Chris Myers. I think the Chris Myers thing was more of, you know, he's going to do some games, and that was a name that was going around the industry. So I don't think he's going to be a full-time, you know, Cubs broadcaster. So I don't, you know, I can't give you a second one. Do you guys have any ideas of who you think they're actually going to hire? This doesn't seem to be a favorite for me.
I think they're going to go as national as they can get, even though it's a local yeah. thing. And I if it's Bob Costas, I'm good with that. Bring in Bob Costas, one of the central voices of basketball. That's what I. That's who I would go with.
Do you think Bob Costas really wants to do every game, though? I mean, really? I can't imagine that.
Zero chance of that.
Right.
Oh, zero.
It's a special.
You asked me a question.
It's a special person that wants to do every baseball game.
Yeah. I don't think Steve said he's going to do every game, but that would be, you know, that would be an ideal name, of course. But,
right.
But Bob, you know, sitting on his laurels and his all the Hall of Fames he's in, and right. the fact that he's 67 years old, I doubt that there's any full-time baseball in his future.
Well, he'd be younger than the White Sox manager, so I say that's a possibility. All right, John, thank you for your time. We appreciate it this morning. Gegazent, and enjoy whatever you're going to be doing the rest of the day. Thanks a lot.
Take care, John. Thank you.
Guys.
All right, John Greenberg, founding editor-in-chief of The Athletic. We thank him for joining us, and we thank you for joining us for really a milestone in broadcasting, the last show of the Rosenblum Levine experience. And 847 texter, you know, it 847 texters, you could tell me you guys did 1,000 shows this year. Every day has felt like one long day. Congrats on the 15-year show anniversary and retirement. Thank you very much. We'll take a break. When we come back, John brought up characters and White Sox characters, and Ed Farmer's name was invoked. And Bruce, I think we have more to discuss regarding Ed Farmer, and I think we will do that after we take this break. Sound good to you? You okay with that, Bruce?
Perfect, perfect, excellent. My friend.
Excellent. Steve Rosenblum, Bruce Levine, Merry Christmas from us and The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Here's a pitch to Shelton, up and in, ball one. And Rosenberg's laughing. By the way, happy Passover to Al. And for all of our Jewish friends, we know this is the start of Passover. The Seders will start tonight, and be safe when you drive home from wherever you're spending that Seder. Here's the 1-0 to Shelton.
On Christmas here on The Score, where two Jews have booked five Jewish guests, we have Ed Farmer noting the beginning of Passover. It's the official putting of blood on the door jams and marking the houses of the Jews as they celebrate Passover and be safe. And we talked about a little bit about Ed Farmer last segment.
And drinking Manischewitz as well, of course.
And so we talked about Ed as a character, and I know you and I talked about Ed before the show, because you're talking about the Hall of Famers baseball lost this year, and we'll talk about that. But Ed Farmer just, you know, not in the booth and the year. And so, Bruce, I turn it over to you.
Well, Ed was such a unique individual, and I can't talk about the broadcaster without talking about the person first. Ed was one of the finest people and best friends that you could ever have. There's not anything that he wouldn't do for a friend or even people that he didn't know when he heard that they were in need. Ed was one of the biggest hearted people you'll ever meet, a guy that had to change his life significantly at age 40, getting a kidney transplant from his brother and learning how to be his own doctor and keep himself alive through many, 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 many challenges with his health the last 30 years since he got that kidney. And the broadcast, you know, him and John Rooney, you know, fantastic broadcasts for so many years before John left after 2005 and went to the St. Louis Cardinals and still the voice along with Mike Shannon of the Cardinals. And just the idea of Ed taking over play-by-play without, any experience, any practical training as a broadcaster and becoming the voice of the White Sox, being joined, by Chris Singleton, then DJ. Just a fantastic local, Southside kid growing up, and besides realizing the dream of being a pitcher for the Chicago White Sox, becoming the voice of the Chicago White Sox, which was just something that really was exciting. And I mean, we can go into a lot of Ed Farmer's stories, but I just had to give the essence of what I knew from my years of being friends with Ed.
I think the point is that you and well done, Ed, because it was the separating the man from the player, the broadcaster, is just not something easily done for those of us who've seen, know his story, but have seen it up close, that there was, all of that was sincere. It wasn't, he was not doing the whole woe is me thing when he certainly reason to. He became one of the loudest and most sincere spokesmen for organ transplants that you've ever seen or heard or came across. And whatever he needed, whatever he wanted to do for somebody, he made it happen. And when he passed away, there were many stories of people related about Ed Farmer favors that never weren't talked about, didn't make the media, certainly Ed wasn't telling them. He was just that kind of guy of, this is, hey, I can do this. I know these people. I know these people here. Ed knew people. There weren't any people he didn't know, right? I mean, Ed knew people everywhere. It was pretty remarkable, according to those who traveled with him.
He controlled the sports world outside of baseball like nobody I've ever seen before, because of the fact Ed had contacts through the United States and Ireland and Scotland to get you on a golf course that no one else could ever get you on, okay? This is fact. This is 100%, I'm telling you, if you want to believe anything that I say, that's fact. This is 100% fact that Ed controlled so much leverage because of the fact that, hey, you want to go to this golf course in Pittsburgh. You want to go to, he could get you on any golf course in the entire country. And Ed, being the South Side man that he was not afraid to ask for a favor in return. Therefore, he would ask for favors for other people, not necessarily himself, because he was your consummate Southside alderman, getting the things done for people that needed to get done. And his leverage and his power as far as getting things done was beyond anybody I've ever met in my entire life. And it was hilarious because if Ed wanted somebody to get, go to a Notre Dame game and be on the sidelines, they would be on the sidelines. You want to go to a Notre Dame game? Okay, I'll get you. Oh, sidelines? No problem. I mean, this was the essence of Ed Farmer. He was a guy also that didn't go to college. He was drafted out of high school. But he had, knowing and listening to Ed, and if you were a good friend of Ed's, you listened a lot because he had a lot to say. This was a brilliant guy. I mean, he was a 150 plus IQ guy without any question. And knowing all this and still being the humble person he was and the caring person he was so many things to so many different people.
You know what? The word that was missing, but you described it perfectly, was clout. Ed had clout.
Yes.
And used that clout. And he understood clout. And he understood it. He could have given lessons to Blagojevich. It's not about the money. What clout is power that turns into whatever kind of gold you have. Some of it's money and some of it is even greater power, and it becomes exponential. And that's it. Chicago is built on clout. Blagojevich should have known better. Ed knew it. And that was Ed's clout. He had the clout. He could connect the dots for you. And hey, ever heard of this place called St. Andrews? Yeah, I got someone there. I got a friend there. Ed always had a friend, and it was just the stories you know, and the stories you tell, and the stories other people told.
It was never more clear, Steve, than when the White Sox went to the White House to celebrate to be celebrated by President Bush at that time, after the 2005 championship. George Bush could never stop talking about Farmio. And, well, you know, taking shots at him, just laughing. I mean, that was the primary, the whole situation was, I mean, George Bush has been friends with Jerry Reinsdorf since he was an owner in baseball. But George Bush's relationship with Farmio was first name, you know, texting basis. That just gives you the, you know, the essence of, you know, how far Farmio's reach was and what Ed Farmer was all about. I would just laugh and, you know, just marvel at the people that would show up in the booth and the people that he knew and how he would help people all the time. He was just a one-of-a-kind guy that was very talented and also just a fun guy to be around.
Right, right. It was always open house up there. You just didn't know what you were going to get. Hey, George is here. You mean President Bush? Yeah, George is here. That's the way it was. And he was a character. We have another name we talked about in the last hour, a story that was off the field. New White Sox manager, old White Sox manager. Might history have been different? Might the White Sox have been spared some angst? I would like to discuss Rick Renteria and Tony La Russa and a move the White Sox made this offseason. And we'll kick around the idea that it might have been different. So I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Bruce Levine. This is our last show together in 2020. And later on, we'll be playing some highlights from just a year's shows. It's kind of dizzying, Bruce. It's dizzying the things that have happened on our show in 2020. And I think
Jordan will pull out all the highlights.
Right, right. But I don't want to let it go that you saved 500 dogs and you managed to get them all adopted within the duration of one of our previous shows as you used your
pandemic time. I wish you wouldn't brought that up.
But I needed to. It had to be me. You weren't going to bring it up. Much like Farmio, you have that kind of clout and the fact that you got 500 dogs adopted during one of our earlier shows this year just, you know, speaks to the dizzying nature of what you've accomplished, Bruce. So congratulations. And if it needed to be said in what is our last show together.
And a big arf to you as well, Steve. Yeah. A big arf to you.
I'm going to have a biscuit. Steve Rosenblum, Bruce Levine. Merry Christmas to you from the Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Barrett punched Brzezinski right in the grill.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I'm excited. You look at you getting in your career, you want to win. That's the first and foremost. And to have the opportunity to come to an organization that really are making a push to win and win now. And you look at the team they have, they've got a lot of young star power. And you know, you just hope to come in and help kind of push them over the top or help when you can and help kind of push in the direction that everybody wants to go. And that's about winning a World Series. And that's that's why we play the game.
You start.
Okay.
On
the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
That's Bob and Doug McKenzie doing the 12 Days of Christmas. We will have Santa Lost a Ho coming up later, one of the hits of the season. Steve Rosenblum and Bruce Levine, this is our last show of 2020. I can't believe it, but welcome to it. That was Lance Lynn after being traded from the Rangers to the White Sox. And with all the gnashing of dentures of 76-year-old Tony La Russa coming to manage the White Sox, the question needs to be asked, if this trade had been pulled off at the trade deadline, Lance Lynn for Dane Dunning, would Ricky Renteria still have a job because Lance Lynn and not Dane Dunning would have started game three against the A's, and Ricky Renteria, who never wanted to be part of any kind of opener kind of crap, would have had a real pitcher in Lance Lynn. Would Lance Lynn have saved Ricky Renteria's job and the AARP manager for the White Sox? What do you think, Bruce?
Well, first of all, the age discrimination thing I find appalling from Steve Rosenblum.
Okay. I can't believe I'm appalled. There was
two shots in a row.
Appalling.
two shots in a row.
Yes.
On the man's dentures and then his AARP card. Uh-huh. Now, coming from a guy that's approaching the 70-year mark.
I don't even qualify for Medicare yet. So
I find it appalling.
Move along. Nothing to see here.
Your age is something we don't want to talk about, but it's okay for La Russa, of course. But
sure.
Steve Rosenblum's age, no, do not go there. I would say that you brought up a good point about the idea that Lynn might have changed the whole history of the Chicago White Sox. And in fact, if they went to the ALCS and put up a good fight, it would have been a very difficult choice to fire a guy that finished second in the Manager of the Year award this year, and a guy that got 5 first place votes, and I know at least 1 second place vote because I had him in that position in my vote this year. So from all of that, I think it's a great premise, and it's an interesting idea that maybe Tony La Russa would not have been hired. Nobody would be that. Rick Renteria was indeed your manager. But it wasn't only about the last 11 games of the year where the White Sox went 3-8, and the bad decisions in the Oakland playoff game. It was more about the way that they looked at Ricky Renteria handling pitching in general, and the idea that they didn't think by discussions with him, and he didn't think by discussions with them, that they were ever on the same page of how to handle the pitching staff. So I think this would have happened maybe even if he would have gone to the ALCS. We've seen managers change jobs, get fired after winning pennants. So this would not have been, it would have had more shockwaves, but it would have not been a surprise to me if it still happened.
Okay, so what specifically, and do you respect Ricky Renteria for saying, I can't change, I can't do that, I don't believe it, I have to manage the way I believe, or do you say he made a major mistake because your bosses are asking you to do something or look at things in a different way, and you deserve to be fired if you're not willing to do it? Which is correct?
Neither. I think it's just the general idea that he wasn't great in handling pitching, according to them. That he didn't make the moves that were the right moves. He didn't. I'll go back to a start by Dallas Keuchel that he had right before he went on the IL with back problems. They knew that he was dealing with a back all year. He went into a game where he was pitching shutout baseball going into the late innings. The White Sox had a big lead, yet he didn't take Keuchel out. And Keuchel ends up going on the IL later after this start. And the idea that after the game, when I asked Ricky why he didn't take him out earlier with a big lead, his answer was because Keuchel wanted to stay in the game.
Yep.
That in itself, I believe, and this is just me, it hasn't been confirmed or denied, I think that was the beginning of the end for Ricky Renteria being the manager of the White Sox.
I'm with you on that. I remember that was Friday night against the Cubs, I want to say, because Mark Rohde and I were on the air next day, and I just said, how can you let him throw 114 pitches in a game against, I don't care who you're playing, but you have an 8-0 lead. And I had gotten a text from somebody who said he had a White Sox source that said, look, we know there's an extra day off. We know what we're doing here. And I said, I don't believe that because your manager doesn't believe it. For the answer that you got, Bruce, when your manager says he wanted to be in there, who's in charge here? Just like
That's
we were talking about A.J. Hinch. Who's the adult in the room?
That's
and
correct.
It was the wrong answer.
It was the wrong answer.
Ryan, try again. Yeah.
But it you goes might, so, Steve, it goes
you might
so
want
to far
phone
to
a friend.
Point out, it goes so far to show how off they were in thinking philosophically that Ricky, being the great guy and the guy that's gotten the most out of this team, is so different from the guy that they think can take them to a this team to a world championship because of that whatever missing link they feel was there.
Well, maybe Scott Merkin will have that be able to connect some dots for us. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com, and he's the next Jew of the day up for us in our lineup on Christmas Day as we have Jewsapalooza. Steve Rosenblum and Bruce Levine, this is our last show together in 2020. We were just like you. We never thought it would end, and now suddenly it's here, and there's a bittersweet feeling about it, but we'll carry on, and we'll discuss some White Sox next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He's a bulldog. He's a bulldog. I repeat, he's a bulldog.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.